What's up, guys? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, February 23rd, 2018, a.k.a. Cool Greg's birthday. Go show him some love on Twitter, at Kinda Cool Greg. He's a beautiful 26 years old. 26. Good
Happy
Lord.
Happy birthday, Cool Greg.
Up, what's going on?
Good Lord. That is crazy for me to think about. I'm Tim Geddes, joined by the amazing, the Reverend, Jared Petty.
Doki doki.
You got a little fan club over there. I like that.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate that.
Would you steal my thing later?
What? The Baker's Dozen?
Yeah.
I had a guy on Twitter yesterday. He's like, look, I really like you on Kinda Funny Games Daily, but please don't steal Kevin's bit.
I got a box cutter with your name on it.
Or any of the other bits. He's like, please don't take that. And I was like, don't worry, man. I'm just trolling Kevin.
The one bit that I need you to do is the little ditty.
I don't know it. Like right now, you're like, say, Kevin,
because someone on Reddit called me out like, Tim, just fucking man up and do it. And I was like,
you gotta man up and do it. I don't know it, man. I'm scared.
And because he called me out, he was like, oh, you think you're too cool for the ditty? It's not that I think I'm too cool. It's just honestly, I'm kind of stressed about it. Like, I want to nail it.
Worried about the ditty?
Yeah. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out when we get there. This is Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We come at you live with all of the biggest news in video games. You can watch it at your leisure at youtube.com/kindoffunnygames when it goes up as a VOD at around 2 p.m. Pacific time, or you can listen to it on podcast services around the globe. If you want to be a part of the show, you can go to kindoffunny.com/KFGD to write in some questions, or you can go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong if we get anything wrong during the show. And at the end, we will read it to correct it so that the show is 100% factual.
Instantaneous correction.
Almost.
Near instantaneous correction.
Mm-hmm.
Something resembling instantaneous correction. I like it.
For you.
Fact check. That's right.
A little bit of housekeeping. PSVR show. First episode is now live on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames to everybody. And the second episode is available now for $1 patrons on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames.
Exciting.
Our sponsor this week is Jared Petty's Patreon. Patreon.com/Jared Petty.
Well, thank you.
One R. And Jared,
why not?
Two T's in Petty.
And you can get there by going to hopblipjump.com, too. That takes you exactly the same place. But the campaign is going very, very well. I put up something earlier that the goal of kind of creative independence is up there now. We're already more than halfway to that. So that's fantastic. I cannot believe all this has happened in 4 days. My life has changed so much in so many wonderful ways. I get to be fantastic here with you doing this. You do that. But please, I'm a full-time creator now, and that's an interesting way to make a living, let me tell you. So many of you have poured your generosity out any way you can. I really appreciate
it. Just drizzle it on me.
Yeah, I'm not entitled to it, but I sure am thankful for it. And I promise to make good things as long as you keep supporting me.
Well, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We got four news stories today.
A Baker's Dozen! I've muted his mic.
I didn't jump in there.
Oh, Kevin, look, I'm not going to fight you for this one. Not going to fight you for it. I mean, honestly, I think I do it better.
Damn, those are fighting words.
Regardless,
he goes from talking shit about Game of Thrones, now talking shit about Kevin's Baker's Dozen.
Yeah.
I don't know about this Jared guy.
Yeah, I tell you. You know, I'm just here to take over. You saw my Twitter earlier, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think Greg's intimidated. I can move in. He immediately leaves town.
Mm-hmm.
Gone for like, I haven't seen him since.
Yeah. Where's Greg? I know where Greg is. He was at the DICE Awards. That's our first story of the day. I got this rundown from Kotaku. We'll go through it. The 21st DICE Awards, voted on by over 30,000 members of the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences, just wrapped up in Vegas. And among the winners are Breath of the Wild, Horizon Zero Dawn, and Cuphead. Breath of the Wild, we'll go through the entire list.
Yep.
Then, Greg Miller and Jessica Trobot hosted it last night. If you did not watch it live, it is available on IGN as a VOD that you can watch.
Mm-hmm.
They did an amazing job.
Yeah, aren't they naturals?
They're such naturals. And it was so funny. And like, they did a really good job of like getting the crowd amped, because last year it was like crickets. And this year it was way more hype, which I obviously appreciate.
Hey, I'm not just trying to butter up my new boss. I really stand in awe of how natural and how good he is at that. I would give almost any part of my anatomy to have that talent.
Oh,
and
yes.
Likewise, Jessica's, fantastic and experienced and tremendously talented. So it was really entertaining.
Yep, they did a really good job. And what's up, Kev?
Which part would you not give?
What? Which part would I not give?
Almost any part.
Well, I'm right-handed. And so honestly, I really would like to. So if I have my right hand in my eyes, I could probably still play video games, and at least one ear so I can hear the soundtrack. Just about everything else is optional.
There you go, man. Things are getting real fun down there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Greg killed it. Jess killed it.
It's a small gift.
And the and the entire show, I thought they did a really good job with it. Let's go. Oh, and then, of course, shout out to Mr. Nintendo, who, if you were keeping up, he was kind of the meme of the night, where he went up to accept all the awards the Nintendo won, of which there were many. But shout out to him for actually having a speech ready for each game that wasn't just a generic, hey, thank you, you know, to shout out to the developers. He came out, and if they won for sound design, he really talked about the sound design of something like Mario Odyssey and went into it.
Nintendo speaker prepared?
It's crazy.
Yeah, almost as if they thought it through and planned it carefully. It's wonderful. I did kind of wish deep in my heart that he was just Howard Phillips every time. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I think that just goes back to it, a misspent childhood. It was wonderful, and he did do a really good job.
He did a great job. You should definitely watch it. It ended with people giving him a standing ovation.
Don't you just love...
Some people would say it was for Zelda, but others would argue it was for Mr. Nintendo himself.
Award shows are great. I mean, really, they're in a way, they're marvelously pointless exercises in celebrating what we love, and I'm a big fan of any time we can do that.
Hell yeah.
So sit down, make a list of things you love, talk about why each of them are great. It's not like, here's why this is bad and why this is good. It's like, why this is good and this might be even a little better. Yeah. That's a wonderful discussion to have.
Absolutely. And shout out to Mr. Nintendo for this little factoid. Now the internet's kind of like getting into who is this man.
Okay.
The voice of Shy Guy.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
He's the voice of Shy Guy.
He's the voice of Shy Guy.
He's my new idol. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Very cool.
That just makes me want to go play Mario Strikers.
Oh, my God. Mario Strikers. Do not get me started about this. Was it you that brought that up recently?
No. That was on the hype episode you had a couple of weeks ago.
I was about to say, like, I've never talked about Mario Strikers more than in the past week since it came out.
The return of Mario Strikers would be an eye-bleeding moment for me.
It's so good.
Yeah,
why were they so angry? Why were their eyebrows so furrowed?
It's mechanically perfect. It feels great. It's marvelously unbalanced, and I don't care.
Oh, no. It's fun.
It's kind of like Marvel versus Capcom 2, where it's just like a giant mess, and it's a perfect mess.
A beautiful disaster.
Exactly. I love it. Yeah.
I love that game. I feel like we'd have so much fun playing a new version of it.
We should get it out sometime and play it.
Oh, I'm so down for
it. All right. Sorry.
Let's go through the list of winners from the DICE Awards.
All right.
Start with the big one, Game of the Year. No surprise, really.
Yeah.
Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild.
Well deserved. In a year with exceptionally strong games, Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild did some truly unique things and also put unprecedented polish on ideas that we'd already seen explored and took them in directions that we would not have considered otherwise. Everything about the name, everything about the game felt natural. Everything about the game felt exceptional. We're going to get down to some other awards that it won where I'll talk about specific points. But as much as everyone loved that game, I think it's even better than we realize right now. I think it's a game we're going to look back on in 20 years of criticism and go, that was a turning point. That was a place where new things were invented. We've talked so much about how it took other ideas and blended them. But let me tell you what, you take two good things. You know, you take, what are two delicious things? You take chocolate and you take bourbon.
Okay.
You don't want those together in the same cup.
No.
Right? Well, somehow Nintendo found a way to take something great in chocolate and something great in bourbon, put them together, and make them taste even better than the sum of their parts in a way that seemed impossible. That's what the game is all about. That's what it does in so many places in so many ways. Easily deserves Game of the Year right next to some other fantastic. So you and I, we're in the same fan club on this. You're a big proponent of Breath of the Wild.
So, absolutely. Yeah. I love the game so much, and for all of its faults, of which there are a few,
sure,
didn't matter. It was so overshadowed by how amazing the experience was and how much fun I was having and how much... It's one of those games that when I wasn't playing, I couldn't stop thinking about it, and that's video games.
Breath of the Wild's faults are the wabi-sabi of that game. Wabi-sabi is this Japanese idea that everything beautiful must have an imperfection.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, you look at Japanese art or Japanese symmetry in a room that's traditional, you'll always see like one little alcove that's off or one thing that's leaning the wrong way, or in pottery, one tiny flaw. That's the wabi-sabi. It's put there.
Wabi-sabi, man.
It's put there to make sure that it's absolutely
Kevin's
beautiful.
Kevin's my wabi-sabi.
Yeah, nothing can be too perfect. I think most of the imperfections in Breath of the Wild are the wabi-sabi to that game.
Oh, Kevin just makes eye contact with me. He just knew it was coming.
A baker's dozen.
Outstanding achievement in game direction. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Okay, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, the direction of that game is there was none. It was any direction that you wanted. I think that's the beauty of it. And not that that hasn't been done before in games. Obviously, open world is not a new concept. But I do think that that Nintendo coming through and being like, yo, we're calling this open air.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you smoking? And it's like, oh, I get it. I see what you're doing here. And I see how this is different.
Okay, I'm about to agree and disagree with you.
Go for it.
First, the agreement. This is a game that if we're talking about the position of a director on a game and what they do. Talk about a project with some scope. Talk about a big project. How many years was this in development? And for it to, you know, sometimes the longer something is in development, after a certain point, you go, maybe that's a little too long. Maybe something's wrong.
Last Guardian.
But then they put it together and you're like, nope. Wow. They just were spending that time making this better and better and better. But what you said about open air and what they said about that and about lack of direction. Let's get down to the next one. I'm going to have something to say about that.
Ooh, outstanding achievement in game.
Game design.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Outstanding achievement in game design. I just got confused because Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is winning everything.
Okay, this is not a particularly hot take, but I think this is one of the best designed video games I've ever played in a lifetime of playing games. Every open world game is supposed to be about letting you wander around, but really always giving you something enticing either to see, in the case of Shadow of the Colossus, or to do, in the case of something like The Witcher 3, which are both good examples of how doing it right. What Breath of the Wild does, that entire gigantic, humongous world map somehow manages to have all the loneliness and beauty and majesty and natural grandeur of Shadow of the Colossus, and then increases that, somehow even beats it at its own game because of your great mobility. But also, without you realizing it's happening, no matter where you stand in that entire overworld, no matter where you are always standing in an invisible node. And any spot, there are two or three nearby things that very subtly are drawing your eye. It can be a ridgeline. It can be the edge of a peak. It can be a little tuft of grass. It can be a single building in the distance. But as you move toward it, you'll pass more nodes and more and more. You'll see a pillar and you're like, I wonder what's on top of that pillar. And you're just in a whole complex of pillars, but each pillar is designed to entice you a little bit without looking like it's flashing or without looking like something you have to go to, without a big red arrow and circle to steal the YouTube parlance.
Yeah.
And then you go there and immediately, instead of, you may find an item, you may find a challenge, you may find an enemy, or you may find three other things that entice. There are thousands and thousands of those in that overworld that manage to combine the best of the big, open, lonely, beautiful, exploratory emptiness, the naturalism, the open air of Shadow, and the number of things to do and find and see that are actually engaging of Witcher. And yet, you don't realize it's happening because it's so well done. It subverts the design. People are like, oh, there's not a lot going on in that game. There's so much going on. There's more going on in that game than almost any game I've ever played. And it's so well designed, you don't notice. You're just watching the film. It's like watching Star Wars and suddenly you're transported to a galaxy far, far away. Star Wars was not invented. Star Wars has always been here. You're just visiting. That's what this game pulled off, and that's why I think it's one of the best designed video games I've ever played. And that's not touching the dungeons. That's not even those puzzles, which somebody's like, you know, I played Portal once, and I thought, what if I put Link in that?
Yeah.
It is a crowning achievement of the medium. I think that, like everything, it will be subjected to revisionism. And I think that that revisionism is largely going to be poorly placed. This is one of those games that defines not just a generation, but helps define the medium.
I love having you on the show, Jared Petty. You are a national treasure. Next up, we got Immersive Reality Technical Achievement. Lone Echo / Echo Arena. Have you played this?
No, I have not. So this is going to have to be you.
Fantastic. It is one of the few games / experiences I've had in VR that really makes you believe in the system and really it makes you feel like Iron Man. It's like and there's a game to it too. But having it there, it's similar to what you were just saying, where you're transported to a different world. It's so fantastic. And it was probably, I mean, for it winning an award for being immersive. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Kev, what do you have to say about Echo Arena?
I mean, first of all, Andy's too damn good. Second of all, it would have been one of the most amazing party modes we would have ever made. And it sucks that I didn't bring my own, like, I didn't confirm with myself and be like, yeah, let's just use our audio instead.
There was a problem with our capture, with their capture kit.
With their capture kits, but like, yeah, the game itself is exceptional. I love VR. I've never experienced anything quite like this, where it made this team sport fun.
Yeah.
And it made me want to play, and it, like, it makes you sweat.
It'll definitely make you sweat.
Yeah, make you sweat.
They want sweat. They want immersive reality, technical achievement, and the immersive reality game of the year. I totally buy it.
You sold me.
Yeah, the only game I've played in VR that I actually, I guess there's two games that I've enjoyed on a similar or more level is Superhot and I mean that's cool, but when there's a game on top of the experience and it's still an experience, I think that's when VR is at its best. And I think that the Superhot to me is the ultimate level of that, because you feel like such a badass, and like that's kind of the point.
Yeah,
and
go ahead.
What's the other one? It's Sprint Vector. So pretty much the two episodes of PSVR show that are up right now. Like those games are great. But Echo Arena, man, special game.
I need to play Echo Arena. I need to play more VR than I have, because I think VR is here to stay. I really do. I think it's going to be changing our lives over the next few years in ways we haven't even imagined. At this point, I still have a very sentimental place in my heart for Polytronic Super Hypercube. Which is a very simple little game.
Oh, Super Hypercube, yes.
Yeah, very simple little game.
I thought that was all one long name. But Polytronics Super Hypercube.
Yeah, yes. which I really do think is just, that would be an amazing name. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, exactly. The game. No, Super Hypercube is a simple looking game that could only happen in VR. Mm. And it's got that very rare, everybody talks about, you know, making that easy to understand, hard to master arcade game. But it's almost impossible to actually do it.
Yeah.
Man, they nailed it. But I've fallen behind in VR, and it's time for me to catch back up. So thank you for this recommendation.
You want more recommendations every Thursday, the PlayStation VR show. Next up, we got Mobile Game of the Year, Fire Emblem Heroes.
Where you fall on that?
That's kind of where I fall on that. I love Fire Emblem. And the idea of a Fire Emblem on mobile makes so much sense to me. Mm-hmm. Grid-based, slower, touchscreen, all that. Totally in. Sign me up. I don't like the gacha stuff. Yeah. And I, you know, committed to a couple hours with the game. And I quickly realized, I was like, this is an almost success for me, but it's not really a home run. And I know that people love the game. And I know that there are millions of people playing it every day.
Yeah.
But I'm not one of them.
My favorite mobile game of last year wasn't even nominated. It's Taito's Arkanoid versus Space Invaders, which isn't just the most Jared thing ever.
Yeah.
Although Taito's, I know that they made this. Someone came down from heaven and made this game for me. But please look past the idea that this is somehow a retro nostalgia game, because while it has icons from those and steals some mechanics, this is an entirely new game crafted from the bottom up for mobile. It's designed to be controlled on a mobile interface. It works best on a mobile interface. It is a difficult game to describe. It's feature rich, really long, packed with content, lots of variables that you could put in, superb for trying to beat speedruns and times, and it's all one price. You get the entire package, no extra DLC, no buy more and do more later. It's just crammed with content. And all of it's fun. And every stage is a little different than the one before. And they introduce new mechanics constantly. And you can go back and replay those stages with different characters to change up how you play it. And then you can go replay the stages again to try to beat your time and try to meddle up. It incentivizes you to go back to great content and provide you with a flood of content. The core mechanics are really solid. You're just a little paddle at the bottom. But instead of just moving right and left like an Arkanoid, you can move up and down because you're touching. And you have momentum. So like when little ball comes down, if you press up, you knock it up. You're not cool. Just like ponging, you're slamming it and you're able to give direction. And then when it comes down, you eventually charge up to the ability to fire a bow and start shooting beams up. And you're catching power-ups as they drop. And meanwhile, the Space Invaders and the bosses and all the different parts of this game are coming at you and attacking you in different and innovative ways in every stage and dropping bombs. And it just builds up and it's a frenzy. Nobody played this thing, I think. And it's a real shame because it's solid. Just go out and give them your, $5-$10 they want for it. Because you will be supporting the kind of game that we want to exist in this world. Mm. So Taito's Arkanoid versus Space Invaders. It's on Android and iOS, and it is a superb experience.
There you go.
Wasn't nominated. It's a shame.
Let us know in the comments after you play it what you think about it. Handheld Game of the Year, Metroid Samus Returns. I think that's kind of a...
Yeah, the only one,
easy one.
Etrian Odyssey 5 was nominated.
It was nominated.
And should have been in the conversation. Mm. Metroid Samus Returns is... It's thank God we just got a real good Metroid game. I mean, that needed to happen. I was really worried about Metroid for
absolutely.
A while.
Absolutely. And it was troublesome for a while. And I feel, you know, I was kind of down on Samus Returns just because it was stuck on the 3DS. And we talked about this a little bit. And also it being a remake of Metroid 2 felt like a weird step to me because we'd already seen such amazing fan remakes of Metroid 2. Metroid 2, my least favorite Metroid, well... My least favorite good Metroid. I think that's fair to say.
I like that. I like how you put that.
But, you know, playing through it, it's still such a joy. And there's so much there. And it proved to me that, like, Metroid can be relevant and can sell very well. And I think that in retrospect, it's a great decision that they stuck it, quote unquote, on the 3DS because they can boost those sales up and get Metroid into being kind of a powerhouse franchise like it belongs.
Yeah. Pick up that 3DS. Bring it on your trip, Tim. You were talking yesterday about this. You got to put it in your bag. Bring it on your trip.
I already beat it. I'm done.
Or bring it along again. Also, if you haven't tried Etrian Odyssey 5, if you like RPGs that are well-designed and well-thought-out, and you like hard games, and this isn't like sadistically hard, but legitimately hard games, it is a superbly crafted, very interesting game. And I think you ought to give it a try. It's a dungeon crawler. That whole series is like that. That is a tremendous series. Etrian Odyssey 2 is still one of my all-time favorite games. And I think you may want to check the series out, and 5's the latest installment in that, and I think that it's worth your time.
The Dice Sprite Award went to Snipperclips.
So let's talk about the Sprite Award. Do people know what the Sprite Award
is? I do not.
Because the Sprite Award's not like, hey, here's a Sprite. The Sprite Award, as I understand it, is about, here's a low budget, low resource game that actually came out as something special. Did something special. It's like, man, there sure wasn't, there weren't a lot of resources plugged into this in the AAA world, but wow, they did something really cool with limited resources.
And wow, what a game Snipperclips is. It totally deserves that if that is what the award is for.
Yeah, I think Snipperclips is a really great pick for this award. I think probably Thimbleweed Park would have been on my list for this as well, but Snipperclips is a really neat game that deserves kudos.
Greg Miller hates it. He's wrong. It's okay. It's fine. People can be wrong about things. There's a party mode up right now on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames of us playing Snipperclips, and it is fantastic. I love that game so much. Outstanding achievement in online gameplay, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Okay, so yeah, before we gloss over this, games got all kinds of cheating problems. Games rough around the edges. Games not even done, depending on who you ask. But it created an entirely new kind of video game. That's rare. How often do we do that?
Yeah.
How often do we create a genre?
And I mean, the thing there is, like, even if they weren't the first to do it, to do the Battle Royale, they were the ones that, you know, made it a mainstream household name.
Yes. I mean, I can go back to Herzog's Vi and I can go back to Dune 2 and say, yes, those invented the RTS, but Command & Conquer brought it into the consciousness.
Yeah.
PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, same kind of deal.
Strategy simulation game of the year went to Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle.
I like that one. I like that pick. What do you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm right there, too. We talked about this a couple months ago back when we were looking at the rest of the Game of the Year awards. I think it's a little bit unfair because we aren't the type. Oh, I don't want to speak for you. We at Kind of Funny aren't the type of people that play Warhammer and play all of these other strategy games.
Well, have I got good news for you, Tim. Let's diversify.
Let's do it.
I love a good grid-based strategy game or a good tactics game. Mm-hmm. I love me a good war game. I love taking cover, and I love setting up fire support, and I love overwatching, not in the Overwatch, although that's cool too, but in the traditional waiting for somebody to walk across your line of fire in a turn-based game sense.
Yeah.
So we're going to have some fun here.
Well, so I guess that's my question then. With last year with the XCOMs and with the total Warhammers, is Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle the right answer, or is it just the easy answer because it was the only game in the genre that most people
it's
played?
It's not just the easy answer. That's a list of great games there. I mean, the nominees are fantastic, but I think the fact that this came out of left field and surprised us with something so unique, this opened the door, because DICE is an award. Yes, it's about honoring the, at least as I understand it, not just honoring the achievement from a technical level, but about honoring the context, what it meant, what it did. And this, again, opened the door to a genre a lot of people kind of forgot about. And also, it's superb. I mean, that's the other bit. It's not just like a gimmick where they're just like, we reskinned XCOM. They really played to the strength of two vastly different franchises, brought them into one game, and then built a super solid version of that genre that was accessible to new players, but challenging for veterans, and had the character of both. That's a great achievement. That's why I think it probably deserves this award. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Yeah. Sports game of the year, FIFA 18.
Time for that disclosure. That's right. I still own that stock at Electronic Arts at this point. So,
well, congratulations.
Ethical disclosure here. I can't really, you know, I can comment on this, but I don't think I should.
Role-playing game of the year, Nier Automata.
There's a bit of a surprise, maybe.
I mean, I'm happy it won something. I know people love that game, but not Persona.
The year of P5, Nier Automata wins. Yeah, I think this is probably the most controversial choice of the show for a lot of people. But it's kind of like, again, it's kind of like choosing between chocolate and bourbon.
Yeah.
These are two delicious things. They're very different. They're both great.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a case where it just comes down to preference. If I were scoring these as a critic, it would be very, very hard for me to make much difference between the two for vastly different reasons. Nier has some parts that are kind of rough around the edges, but it does some extremely innovative things. Persona 5 is one of the slickest video games I've seen in a very long time, and has some exceptional gameplay. I would not have wanted to be a voter on this one. No. Which way would you have voted?
Well, seeing as I did not play Persona 5, okay, and I did play some of Nier Automata, I would give it to Nier Automata.
Yeah, I know somewhere Andrew Goldfarb is weeping.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And again, Shin Megami Tensei in general, that universe is just fantastic and deserves all the respect it gets. So there's a little part of me that's like, aw, but then there's the other part of me that's thinking, you know, somewhere Megan Sullivan is doing cartwheels. She was a cheerleader for Nier back in the day. And it's like, no, guys, you don't know what you're missing here. And so, you know.
And then here you go with the Automata.
Exactly.
Racing game of the year, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
Let's ask Gary Whitta about this. Whatever.
I don't know about this,
man. I like cars going around tracks. I think it's fun. I'd rather shoot turtles at people than do anything realistic. I'd rather jump over barriers and crash through things than do any kind of I've played Forza. Actually played it fairly extensively for a while and enjoy the simulation genre okay, but I'd much rather do goofy things in a car.
Yeah, me too, absolutely. But I do think that it's kind of a weird pick here to give Mario Kart 8 Deluxe racing game of the year. Yes, it is my racing game of the year, but I feel it's not fair because there are true racing fans out there, and games like Forza should be rewarded, especially when at the end of the day, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe was just a port of a game that should have won years ago when it was on the Wii U. I don't know. It's I can't have it both ways with this, and I understand I'm being kind of a hypocrite.
You're not being a hypocrite at all. No, you're just trying to thinking at it from all angles. I think that's smart and fair.
Because I loved Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, and I put probably more time into 8 Deluxe than I did 8 proper when it first came out. I put a lot of time into that game and all of its DLC. So, yeah, fighting game of the year, Injustice 2.
I think that one was going to be a foregone conclusion. Mm-hmm. I really like what NetherRealms does from an artistic standpoint. I like how much work they put into their stuff. NetherRealms fighting games are not my favorite ones to play. I feel like someone who appreciates them. It's kind of like sipping a fine wine, but being afraid to drink the whole glass. I'm like, you know, that's a pretty fantastic Merlot, but I'm more a Chardonnay guy.
Oh, no, you're not.
And we
don't do Chardonnay here.
We don't do Chardonnay here. Chardonnay. How about a Chianti?
We're down with Chianti.
I'm big with Chianti. All right. Well, I have a lot of alcohol metaphors today. I'm starting to wonder about my life a little. I've been on keto for a few weeks, so I guess I'm just missing it. NetherRealms, I appreciate how much quality they cram into their games. I don't
and quantity as and, well. Yeah. Like that, I think that's what impressed me the most with NetherRealms, because Injustice 2 is the first of their games that I really played, and I played it over the winter break, and the story mode was so fantastic, and I loved what they did, and I've talked that to death, so I won't repeat it. But once I beat it and I realized the mission modes and all the other stuff they had, and I started playing, I'm like, wow, this is just as good as the story mode. There's so much here there's so much thought put into each mode, and it's not just like, oh, here's a bunch of shit you can do. It's like, here's a bunch of shit that's worth doing.
Yeah, you see a lot of that in MKX as they matured through the games, and they really have managed to invigorate these franchises. Injustice is just not my game, but I think it's worthy of the kudos it's receiving.
Family game of the year, Snipperclips.
Yeah, sure. That's great. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Right, I mean, family game's like a weird genre, because it's like, what does that exactly qualify? Does that just mean colorful? Mario Kart 8, Mario Odyssey.
Like, I think it means something you can play with your kids. Yeah. And it's accessible enough that you can do something together. I mean, that's why I believe when they say family here, Snipperclips is a game that you can sit down with a family of four and you can all play it together. Yeah. And it doesn't penalize you for time. And there's multiple solutions to the puzzles. And it's easy to control and understand. And it's very accessible. I have a friend who's playing through Mario Odyssey with his five-year-old, and one's playing Mario and one's playing Cappy, and they're having a ball, the two of them together. So in that sense, I think that's kind of where I draw my, and also nothing that's going to be too frightening or graphic for children. Yeah, definitely.
Adventure game of the year, Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, if we're going to call adventure game by that definition, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
Action game of the year, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
So this, okay, Kevin, you like that one? Yeah. For action game of the year, I'd be a Cuphead guy on this one.
Me too. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Not even a question. Cuphead gets some love, though, so I'm not going to be too mad about it.
Yeah.
Outstanding technical achievement, Horizon Zero Dawn.
Now, I'm not smart enough to understand the outstanding technical achievement category because I don't code games. And I don't code game artwork and game sound and all the things it takes to come together. But if I have an inkling of what this award's about, I think Horizon deserves it.
Horizon Zero Dawn is one of those tentpole tech showcases where, especially when you start throwing all the acronyms and the letters and the numbers and shit, 4K, HDR, or whatever, Horizon is the game that I like to tell people, like, you need to find an OLED TV and watch it in 4K, HDR, and it will change your life. Horizon is that game, and it's beautiful. It's fantastic. The way that Aloy moves, the way that the grass interacts with everything, and how beautiful the skyscape is. It's such a beautiful experience and a technical achievement.
Yeah.
Outstanding achievement in story, Horizon Zero Dawn. I can't say I agree. But
where would you go?
I don't think I have a better answer. I just didn't love Horizon's story in the way that people like Greg did.
I think
about that.
Story is hard because that's a story being told through an action game. Then you look at something like Edith Finch, which is fundamentally a walking simulator, and people are like, wow, blah, blah, blah. I love walking simulators. I think they're great games. And then Edith Finch is a take you haven't seen much before where it's a series of short stories that are all tied together. You're playing little vignettes that are all happening at different times to members of a family. And it's a very unique mode of storytelling. So it's not just like, oh, we did something that gave you the feels. We did something that gave you the feels in a really creative way that kind of transcends the mechanics of the game. And I think that's something that maybe didn't get enough heft in this. That said, I appreciated that Horizon took a game about robot dinosaurs and made an effort to make me feel something. And likewise, I think that people have fastened on to that character a great deal, and a lot of the story is tied into that as well. And we can, I mean, these are separate categories in these awards, but
yeah.
I do think maybe the Edith Finch might have gotten a little less than it deserved here. If you haven't played it, even if you don't like walking sims, you might want to check that one out.
Okay. Outstanding achievement in sound design, Super Mario Odyssey.
I like that. I like the choice a lot.
I buy it. I also feel like there's a lot of other games that did great this year, including Resident Evil 7. The sound design in that game was fantastic.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, but Mario Odyssey, I mean, it's such an achievement on so many levels, and it's so polished, and I feel like sound is one of those things where you don't notice it being such a beautiful thing. It's the little details. It's, you know, when you're in the electrical wires as the little spark thing. And it makes that sound, but it's that sound not only sounding exactly like it should, but changing its pitch based on the music in that level. And it's those little details.
One of my favorite things about that game that I noticed early on playing it was, you know, people talk a lot about the 2D sections where you'll go into a wall and out. When you go into the wall, the music changes to an 8-bit version of the theme that's playing. But one of the things that happens is it doesn't just start a new theme. It picks up at precisely the moment you enter the pipe and come into the different world. So it doesn't miss a note. And yet you're hearing a different theme,
yeah,
playing through that. And when you pop back out, likewise, it's exactly, that is a really, really cool bit of sound design.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Outstanding achievement in original music composition, Cuphead.
Yeah, Cuphead's music's pretty Cuphead's dope.
Soundtrack's great. Yeah. And it's so fitting to the whole overall aesthetic to it.
Cuphead had the really had the misfortune to come out the same year as Breath of the Wild. If it hadn't, I wonder if we'd be seeing it on top. But Zelda or Mario the same way.
Yeah.
But Cuphead
last year
is,
was a great year. It was Horizon.
Yeah, exactly. There's too many good games. But I mean, Persona. if you're gonna you know put a gun to my head and tell me which would you rather play, Cuphead or Horizon? Probably Cuphead.
Yeah, I mean, don't ask me that.
And I'm not saying I'm not saying there's any. I mean, Horizon's a work of art.
Totally.
But Cuphead was. Like, how often do you see something where you're just like, well, ain't never seen that before?
Yeah. Outstanding achievement. Oh no, outstanding achievement in character. Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. I didn't play it. Have you?
No. So
oh, think, really?
Yeah, we're in the
Seems
same
like
spot.
A Jared game.
I know. I think we're in the same spot here, unfortunately.
But I mean, from everything I've heard, this sounds like the right call.
Yeah, I was worried about this one. I was hoping to lean on you here.
Yeah. So, and then the final two here, outstanding achievement in art direction and outstanding achievement in animation. Two more for Cuphead.
Yeah, these were gimmies.
Duh.
Yeah, like, duh. You exactly. Can't.
What else would even be?
Animation? Yeah, can you imagine an internet where Cuphead didn't win the animation award at DICE this year?
My God. Pitchforks everywhere.
Fun fact, Cuphead, lots of pitchforks.
That is true?
Yeah.
God, I love Cuphead so much. Really I want good. More. I want DLC. I want a sequel. God,
you may get that. I wonder if they'll, I don't know, if you were them, would you just look that in there and go, oh, Lord, we're going to do something. We're not doing that again. I mean, think about the amount of work.
I'm going to be surprised. I mean, it's, we talked about it a couple weeks ago in the Gamescast, but it sounds like it's a duh, they're going to make another Cuphead. It sold so well. Yeah, you're right. Like, there's so much work that has to be put into these games, not just from a design standpoint and from a gameplay standpoint, but from an animation and
exactly
and also just a character, like designing the characters even. And one boss fight goes through like six different forms.
Yeah. What's your Cuphead sequel look like? Because I've got my template.
I don't know. I mean, I'm down for more, and mm-hmm. I feel like the. Just more bosses. That's all that I really need. I do feel like the platformer levels could be tweaked a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't dislike them as much as it sounds like a lot of other people did. I could definitely do with less of the airplane.
Okay. You know, a little less levels. Airplane there.
Yeah.
Kind of like those minecart zipline levels in Donkey Kong.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'd be down for like another mechanic being added, like another type of gimmick level design.
Look at that. Yeah. I wish I could buy a version of Donkey Kong Country that didn't come with minecarts and ziplines because mm-hmm. that would, because I love Tropical Freeze until I get to a minecart and then I turn the game off.
Really?
Screw those levels. I really like Tropical Freeze. I hate minecart levels. And I hate those zipline levels even more.
I feel like Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze treated the minecarts with respect and the people with respect and understanding that they were so bad in the original games that now it's kind of like these are going to be very challenging, but challenging in a Cuphead way.
I felt like they took it into consideration, but it just felt like eating poop instead of eating diarrhea.
Wow.
Like, it was just, I was like, wow, I really do not want to do this. I appreciate the effort. However, for Cuphead. My template's easy. So Cuphead 1, those platforming levels, don't screw the bosses up. Just do more cool stuff with bosses. They have great boss ideas. But when it comes to the levels, Cuphead 1, that's Contra.
Mm-hmm.
Cuphead 2, Bionic Cupmando.
Okay.
Give him a grappling hook and make it more vertical and allow him to go vertical horizontal. Open it up.
Okay.
So that you're playing through larger levels where you can swing around and explore a little more and open things up, a few more hidden things on the levels. Make it the Mario world to Mario 3 of Cuphead. Man, that'd be where I'd go. Like,
whatever they do, Studio MDHR has my money. Cuphead is one of my favorite games of all time.
Well done, people who create art.
Next news story. Final Fantasy 15 will carry on into 2019. This comes from Destructoid. Four additional add-ons are in the pipeline. The post-release episodes centered on Gladiolus, Prompto, and Ignis were really just the beginning for 2016's ever-expanding RPG adventure. Square Enix has already committed to three more DLC releases, the first of which will focus on the main story adversary Arden. The release throughout the year, in an interview with Dengeki, Final Fantasy 15 director Hajime Tabata gave a status update on the DLC schedule. He says the development team intends to do one more piece of DLC than previously discussed. So now there's four left to go, not three. And this newly confirmed final add-on is aiming for 2019.
Well, woohoo there.
More Final Fantasy 15. Never would have thought.
I don't know. I mean, it seemed to me, maybe I'm being unfair, but it seemed to me that Final Fantasy 15 was an unfinished game that needed to ship. That the first part got the polish that the second part never got at the beginning.
My problem is, these DLCs aren't solving that problem.
No, they're not. They're just adding things
instead of finishing the things. Final Fantasy 15 will always be one of my biggest disappointments in video game history. Not that it was a bad game. It was a good game and had a lot of great elements to it. I just wish that it wasn't so rushed feeling. I wish that the story made sense and was there for you and you didn't need to watch an anime and a movie to kind of understand where things are going. I will always wish, and it's, you know, one of those people always get upset at the G1ers and people like, oh, I just want the old thing. But I really wish that we got Final Fantasy versus 13.
Yeah.
All the trailers that we saw at those TGS shows of what that story looked like, and back when there was Stella and Luna stuff, all that, I wanted to see what that looked like. And I feel like if they completed that game and completed that story, it would have been one of the more special Final Fantasies. And instead, its legacy is going to be looked back on as the game that took forever to come out and then never stopped coming out.
I think Final Fantasy 15 should be called Video Game, colon, the video game.
Yeah.
It is the most video game I've played. And and all the beauty and wonder of what video games can be, and all the horror and weirdness of what video games could be are wrapped up in that single game, which I have a very warm spot in my heart for and thoroughly enjoyed. But I think the criticisms you're raising there are fair, and the story makes no sense, but that is, again, to be fair, kind of two-thirds of Final Fantasy games.
True. But what sucks is there was something so special to me about the idea. When you sell Tim Geddes on the story of Final Fantasy 15, there's a group of bros that go on a bachelor party road trip to deliver him to his fiance. I am fucking in. That sounds awesome.
Also, how in the world did you guys not just rent a car, a convertible, and drive across America to pick up Jen? And like,
oh my god,
wearing very stylish clothes. How did you not do that?
That's really funny.
I don't understand how that didn't happen. Yeah, just you guys in fabulous clothing and a bunch of Coleman camping gear.
Yeah,
driving in a convertible to pick up Jen. Yep. Yeah, and got some cup noodles. How did that not happen?
I don't know, man.
That's a missed opportunity right there.
Next news story. I'm gonna cut one of these because there's not much to say. Just to read the headline for you, Riot Games reveals loot box rates. So if you're interested in that, you can go check that out on Riot's page. Yeah, good for them. I think we don't need to add too much commentary. Yep. Obviously, more transparency is always good.
Yep.
And then the final news story of the day, this comes from IGN. There's a new Ghostbusters game announced. It is an AR game. Let's get into this. Ghostbusters World is a mobile augmented reality game like 2016 Juggernaut Pokemon Go, in which players use smart devices to find and catch specters, ghosts, and apparitions. Ooh. The game is coming to Android and iOS this year, although a specific release date and price have not yet been revealed. More information will be announced at GDC next month. In Ghostbusters World, players will be able to battle and capture hundreds of ghosts from all dimensions of the franchise, including the films, TV shows, comic books, theme parks, and video games. There will also be new ghosts to capture created especially for the game. Next stage is handling development as part of a collaboration between publishing partner 433 Inc., Sony Pictures Entertainment, and Ghost Corps. The game was revealed as part of Google's R-Core announcement, and a demo is on display at the Google Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, Spain, right now.
I'm on board with this if there's a special Egon mode where instead of ghosts, I can collect more spores, mold, and fungus.
Mm-hmm.
If that exists, I'm in.
There was a very quick teaser video that went out where it's just a bunch of people and their phones go off and it's the Ghostbusters alarm.
Yeah.
And then they all team up together and then they capture a ghost. And then the fucking trailer ends with a stinger of the Ghostbusters music hitting. And I'm like, there's no way Greg Miller's not excited about this.
Yeah, well, like, Ghostbusters is a nifty franchise and it with an almost universal potential appeal that I don't think has been treated nearly as well as it could be for a long time.
Absolutely not.
And I'd really like to see more done with it in creative ways. I don't think this is your starting point. I really do think you'd need a more mainstream cultural push first, and then this could be a bigger deal. I'm not saying it's going to fail. That's not what I mean at all. But I don't think this is what's going to change people's minds about Ghostbusters. I think that what they tried to do with the recent film was admirable. I don't think it worked out very well. That's too bad. But I'd like to see Ghostbusters get another lease on life, because the idea of a group of friends that hunt supernatural entities and go on adventures, look no farther than the still remarkably enjoyable Real Ghostbusters cartoon series to see how good that can get. That is a tale that can be told in any generation, at any age, really with almost any core cast of interesting friends.
Yeah.
So, you know, this, yeah, who didn't want to catch ghosts? So I'll play with this.
Kebabs writes in about this news story. There's a Ghostbusters World mobile game. Probably like Pokemon Go. You don't need Greg to come in and tell you that's probably not a good idea. I looked at the mentioned developer NextStageCo and I can't find anything about them. No Twitter, no Facebook, no website, nothing. That doesn't bode well for me. And in particular, if the game's like Pokemon Go, then I can't see it succeeding, because while Pokemon has over 150 creatures fans have been in love with since the 90s, Ghostbusters has one. Slimer. And it'd be a tough sell to make every ghost in the game as iconic as C-list Pokemon like Love Dick. Wait, Love Disc, I think, isn't it? That's not Love Dick. and Popplio. Regardless, whatever you might say about this game, it isn't as sad and confusing as Garfield Go, released at the start of E3 last year, where you feed Garfield for Amazon, Domino's, and Starbucks coupons and discounts, as opposed to catching stuff.
Think I missed that
and
one.
Now it's real.
Okay, heading out for that right now. I would like to take issue with the idea that Slimer is the only one we care about. There's also the delightful Stay Push Marshmallow Man, so that's 200% more ghosts.
It's true.
Right there.
Solid points. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
You're right, though, Kebabs. We'll see where
Kebabs
this goes.
Kebabs is, in fact, although, yeah, again, just because we never heard of the dev doesn't, you know, nobody really heard of Toby Fox before he made Undertale, too. So, you know, every now and then somebody comes out and surprises you.
Jared, now it's time for the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every week.
This is exciting.
Give it to me, Kevin. Please.
I don't know it. Somebody wrote do, 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 do. But I don't know where the episode.
Okay, can I fill in with something?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, so let's try. Let's do Paul W.S. Anderson's Mortal Kombat.
Okay.
You good with that?
Uh-huh. All right, how today? Past Cure on Xbox One, PS4, and PC. Sword Art Online, Fatal Bullet on Xbox One, PS4, and PC.
I have not played that.
Yume Nikki Dream Diary on PC, Abo Kashem on Xbox One, PS4, Conrad the Kitten.
Whoa, is that the sequel to Space Cats with Lasers?
Maybe. Okay. Conrad is with a K on PS4. Restless Spirit on PS4. Fable Fortune on Xbox One. Symmetry on Xbox One. Tokitori 2 Plus Nintendo Switch Edition on Nintendo Switch. Twin Robots Ultimate Edition on Nintendo Switch.
By the way, I am going to try, before we get back together next week for Kind of Funny Games Daily, I am going to try out Space Cats with Lasers.
Okay, good.
All right, I'm going to have the review.
The people need to know.
All right.
Reader Mail is brought to you by patreon.com/JaredPetty. Like we said earlier, even just $1 would mean a lot. I would like to see just one of you. If there's anybody out there named Mark, I want you to subscribe to Jared Petty's Patreon. $1. Please. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, you're welcome. Oh, well.
And Mark.
First question comes from Mark. I must have read that.
What if the question is like, Tim, why did you just ask me for $1? Then you're like, what?
Oh, that's funny. Mark says, hi, Kind of Funny Games Daily host. This week, there's been a lot of talk about remasters with Burnout Paradise getting announced, including Dead Space and Mass Effect, but all that stuff. But the thing is, many of these games are playable on a current-gen console and look great, too. That console being Xbox One, which allows for backwards compatibility with these titles and many more. These titles are cheaper on the Xbox Marketplace, between $4 and $8, than they would be as a remaster, and they still look great. My question is, do you think there should be less of a focus on remasters and more on backwards compatibility when it comes to these older titles? Thanks, Kind of Funny Games Daily host, and have a good weekend.
I got thoughts on this.
Go for it.
All right. So I love backward compatibility. It's more important to me than I think, and it remains more important to me than I think it does to a lot of people, because I play a lot of older games. I really love to revisit games. History is an interest of mine. Also, for a show I do, I capture old game footage. So these are all very helpful things to have. Backward compatibility, when we were at IGN, we ran a backward compatibility list for Xbox when they announced this. And it was a very, very popular page. People loved to read that page, and we updated it regularly. But it seems to me that the ratio between people that appreciate the service and are glad it's there and the people that regularly utilize the service might be a little disproportionate. And I think that publishers and developers assume that there are sections of the audience that will not play a game simply because it's older. And they're certainly not going to buy a game at a price that's going to make the publisher or developer a profit if it's older, because at that point it's been marked down to levels where there's practically no return on their investment. Mm-hmm. Because of that, I think we're going to continue to see remasters. And I appreciate good remasters. Lazy remasters are frustrating. Good remasters are stellar. Shadow of the Claw. Oh, man. What a time to be alive.
I know.
I really didn't think after HD Collection that we'd get another one.
No way.
I couldn't believe
that. Who would have thought?
Yeah. And so that was just fantastic. And to see that game given the just sparkling treatment it received. I've heard you talk about this too, so I'm not going to rant on it. I think that backward compatibility helps sell consoles from a business perspective when you announce it early in a console cycle, because people want to be able to plug in one piece of equipment and go back to their old games. And I think a certain percentage of people keep going back to those old games consistently. And then the rest kind of look and go, man, I wish I could play my old game. And then they move on and buy the new version.
Yeah.
So I want to live in a world where backward compatibility is a priority. I'm not sure that it'll ever supplant remasters. And I'm pretty okay with that. What are your thoughts?
I love everything you just said is absolutely correct. I love backwards compatibility because I do care about old games as well. I actually, with this, Mark, I mean, I've said this recently once I got my Xbox One X, but I have been firmly in the PlayStation and Nintendo ecosystems for a long time. And booting up the Xbox One X and really understanding what the backwards compatibility meant kind of blew my mind when I realized you can just download all those games on the marketplace. Yep. I thought you needed the disc to be put in. I was like, okay, cool. Like, that's great. It's a game changer that the way that Xbox does backwards compatibility on with both 360 and original Xbox software, it really just makes it like PS1 classics were on the PlayStation 3.
It's a tremendous service. I mean, and it's helping keep some games that would just be inaccessible a lot. You know, I know that there are only 10 people in America now that want to play Radiant Silver Gun.
Or Fusion Frenzy.
But if you do, it's there.
You can get it for relatively cheap. And I think that it's so important. And I do not think that Xbox gets enough credit for how amazing the service is and how many games they add consistently. And I don't think they're doing a good job marketing the fact that they're digital and you can download them and it's just on their store. And when it comes to the remaster versus backwards compatibility argument, I think that we're in a weird place now where unless the remaster is adding something that is definitively this generation, we don't need it. Last gen, I think that remasters made a lot more sense because it brought PS2 era games into the HD era. Widescreen support was there for some PS2 games, some GameCube games, some Xbox games. But once we got to 360 PS3 generation, everything was widescreen.
Yeah.
And that's playing games in the original aspect ratio, the 4:3, is weird nowadays.
It feels odd.
It feels off, right? So having Ico or Shadow of the Colossus come back as the definitive additions in the PS3 remaster, that made sense. That added something. But yeah, Dead Space, if it's $4 on Xbox One's backwards compatibility, what could they really add? The answer is now 4K and better frame rate and all that. But if they don't add those things,
What's the point? Yeah, and I think the mainly is the assumption that people might buy it anyway.
Mm-hmm. And they will. Zach Wagger has an interesting follow-up question. Hey guys, a bit of a pickle here.
Is that a sweet pickle or a sour pickle?
This sounds sour based on what he's
doing. Sour pickle, okay. Not a butter pickle?
Recently got the One X, and with all the games I owned on the 360 being backwards compatible, should I trade in my old console or sell it? I know the golden rule is to never trade in your console, but what's the point here? Thanks. Love the show. Super excited. Jared's part of the crew.
I have never, ever reached a place in my life where I've come to not regret trading in a console
or getting rid of a console. At some point, there will be a moment, whether it's a stupid, nostalgia-fueled fever dream.
Yeah.
Of just being like, oh, I wish I still had my Sega Genesis, and I don't.
Yeah.
Even though I can play those games in 10 million different ways.
There will come a moment in your life, you're going to be annoyed, it's taking up closet space, you don't have the room for it, you're frustrated. don't listen to those voices. Throw all the controllers in a big plastic tub from Walmart and throw them in a closet. And then one day you're going to be like, my hour has come. And you run and you grab it and you're so glad you have it.
And that moment will be worth it. Because for me, it's funny. Like, look, I vividly remember trading in my PlayStation 1 on the same premise of like, well, the PS2 can play the games. Like, I don't need it. I don't need it at all. There's no reason I need it. And now in 2017 last year where I was like, fuck, I wish I still had my original PlayStation 1. Like, it's such a cool piece of hardware and it looks so cool. And it's like, now it's gone. And I can just get another one on eBay.
But it's gotten expensive. That's the thing. We're hitting the place where a lot of the stuff, the collectors are hoarding them now and a lot of the equipment's breaking and it's getting real expensive real fast. Mm. Hold on to your stuff, man. That happens with, and you're like, well, it's not expensive. In every generation, it happens. And you're going to reach that point where you're just like, oh, man. Yeah, I don't advocate for trading stuff in. I didn't interrupt. Go.
Two more questions for the day. One's not a question. It's more of just a comment. John says, a throwback to yesterday's Soul Calibur character exclusive suggestion. I'd love to see Bloodborne's The Hunter as a PlayStation character.
That's really
cool. That is a fantastic answer.
Yeah, that is a great answer.
You just won, my friend. Congratulations, John. And then the last question of the day, Kitten Tactics says, where the hell is my 2D Zelda Maker game, Nintendo? I don't know that it would work.
Oh, expound.
I think that there's a simplicity to Mario platformers that anybody can make levels and they'll make sense. Not anybody can make good levels, but people with the creative minds can make the good levels. But the tool set's simple enough that people will still have fun creating something, playing through it, whatever skill level they have. Zelda Maker would require so much more knowledge of design and of how things work. And there's so much more questions of why. Why is that there? Why is this? With Mario, it's why? To stop him from getting to the end.
Okay.
Right? It's like that simple. Yeah. It's like there's one question you always ask yourself designing Mario levels, which is, What's the purpose of putting this thing here? Mm-hmm. It's obstacle, 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 obstacle. Zelda, there's way more than that.
Okay. I think that's a fascinating perspective. I think there's a lot of merit in what you're saying. I do think that it would require a different creative approach. But I'm also, I dabble in communities occasionally where people make a lot of homebrew games. I'm a lurker. I play, I don't submit. And I play a lot of homemade stuff, and some of that's made with kits like Game Maker, and some of it's made in other game construction kits, and even neat things like Little Big Planet. And just when I think that something's going to be useless or too difficult, I see what somebody's come up with it, and I go, oh, never mind. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm going to give the creators the benefit of the doubt. If they're given a robust tool set, oh, I used the word robust, oh dear, please forgive me.
What's
robust wrong? Is one of those words that I feel like it's like disruptive or disruption.
Oh,
you just shouldn't say it anymore. Yeah, you just shouldn't say robust. But if they give us a robust tool set, people are going to find neat things to do with it. Zelda's about puzzles. It's about exploration. I think the Zelda thing will be about designing games more than levels. And that's going to be the question. Not just dungeons, even, but games. And
so you're making a lot of very valid points. I guess my argument is you're right. There is an audience out there for this that will make great things. I'm saying Mario Maker is a runaway success as a mainstream game that doesn't just appeal to people that want to make games. It appeals to people that play games.
Yeah.
And I don't think a Zelda Maker would have that same.
Kind of depends what they pack with it. I mean, what if Nintendo surprises us with some kind of subspace emissary built in? Something where it's like, oh, I didn't see that coming. And it inspires a whole new way to work. It would not shock me at all. Looking at the variety of things Nintendo's done, even in its 2D Zeldas, when you look at Zelda, Zelda 2, Zelda 3 on SNES, but also things like Minish Cap and the Capcom ones that came out on GBC. Exactly. Seasons. It's pretty odd stuff going on in those. Yeah. You mind that. I wonder what Nintendo can hand us to go, hey, have fun playing this as well. Or speedrun dungeons that they could do, or different kinds of challenges where maybe it's not about getting to the end.
Yeah.
Maybe it's about doing something else. What about multiplayer competitive or multiplayer co-op? What if it's
Four Swords?
What if it's Four Swords? Exactly. Suddenly, what if it's all around that multiplayer mechanic? And what if your dungeons can link to other people's dungeons? And connect to one another, and you're building a game together, for example, or a massive super dungeon that you all have to cooperate to defeat. There's a lot of fun things you could do with that would be really appealing.
Absolutely. Now it's time to squad up. John on PC, his username is Budud Knight. So that's BUDDUDKNIGHT. Hey, KFGD crew. I took a chance and got Hunt Showdown, and man, do I like it. Looking for clues while fighting zombies and other people is awesome, but I'd like to play with someone that's willing to learn and talk on mic. Barring you need a pretty strong PC to run it. Well, sorry for the long message, and hope to see some best friends online this weekend. So if you want to play some Hunt Showdown with John, hit him up. But Budud Knight. Now it's time for your wrong.
You're wrong.
Yeah, we don't really have like a fun intro thing for that.
You're wrong. No, that's not quite right.
Does he?
Well, what's Craig do? I'm sorry. It's not like me. He's the thing he says. What's he say? I don't know. It's a
lot of words. It is a lot of words. Greg Miller.
What you got there? What do you got there for? What were we wrong about? What if we were completely... Have we ever been 100% right? Yeah? That's happened?
Yeah.
All right, 100% right.
Usually when Capitalist Pig's not watching. Capitalist Pig writes in and says, regarding Super Hypercube, this could be a case of misunderstanding, but I think I heard Jared say the developer was called Polytronic. They're actually called Polytron.
Polytron. He's correct. He's right. It is Polytron. Yep, that's Phil Fish's company. Yeah, Polytron, not Polytronic. Thank you. I think my head was in Tron. Yeah, right there. All right, what else you got? How else were we wrong? Already given you a factual inaccuracy today. Tell you what. Pretty much everything.
Kebab says on the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, he's technically the chosen destructor form of Gozer and is arguably a kaiju, a ghost kaiju.
A ghost kaiju. Well, I mean, he is Gozer, the traveler, the destructor. I mean, that's important. There is no Dana, only Zool. That's important. Good point. Well spoken. What about Vince Clortho?
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Vince Clortho.
Just to add to upcoming games, Turok and Turok 2 Remasters will be out on March 2nd on Xbox One. That comes from Slick Rick. Slick Rick himself.
Okay.
Story.
If that was Turok and Turok 2 Remake, I would feel way better.
Yeah.
If surely they're not going to just give us Turok and Turok 2 with a pretty skin, right? Like those.
I think that's what it is.
I mean... Do you remember
how bad
Turok was?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. That game's not good. I mean, it could be very good with different control implements. Mm-hmm. I cannot fathom that they will not change the controls and make jumping and things like that make sense. Yeah. I'm sure they are. I'm probably just being cynical. Because Turok, game about, being a wanderer fighting big giant monsters, that should be fun.
I'm in.
Big fan of that stuff.
Jared, thank you for joining us this week for your first week of many to come.
Oh, this makes me so...
At Cataphony.
This has been, without a doubt, the happiest week of my life for a very long time. I have had more fun this week than... Yeah, it's been great. I've been here with you guys this whole time. Got to go visit Beyond and Scoop and Comedy Button. Got to talk with some great fans. Got to make some good content. It's been delightful.
On Monday, Greg Miller returns with me to host this beautiful show. And until then, I love you. That's where we do the handshake.